Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. May the entire universe be filled with peace, joy, love, and light. May the light of truth overcome all darkness.
Victory to that light.
Victory to that light. Jai Shri Satguru Satchidanandaji Maharaj Ki.
Jai.
Jai. That opens up everything.
Mataji, thank you so much for being here. I wanted to start by asking if you could share where you were born and anything you know about your birth story.
Oh, I was born in Washington, D.C. at Georgetown University Hospital along the Potomac River. And it seemed that I was very late in coming. Mother, I went to the hospital three times and had to go home. So I wasn't born right on the dot, as they would say. A very good birth, but not on time, is the way that was felt. And one thing, on the 60th birthday, they say it's very auspicious to be born close, at least, to the place, spend your 60th birthday close to the place where you were born. And it happened that on the 60th birthday, I was moving from the New York Institute to the ashram. And we had stopped in D.C. at the Botanical Gardens, because this is the time of the year. Everything was springy, flowers and everything. But the sky looked pretty bad. And we had parked the car by the Washington Monument and walked down to the Botanical Gardens. That's a pretty good walk. And when we were coming back, it looked like a big storm was coming. So we got a taxi to get back to the car. It could have rained at any moment. And the driver said, "Where are you going?" And we said, "Well, we're going immediately to Charlottesville in Virginia." "No, ma'am," he said. "Storms are very bad. It could be a tornado, a very bad storm. You better stay overnight in Washington." So We agreed. We thought what he knew. So we were driving out along the Potomac, and we found a little place to rent a room. And it was on the river, immediately across from the hospital. And that was my birth night, and I was that close to the hospital. It was really very interesting, and we hadn't planned that at all. It wasn't in our plans. And they say it's very good for the 60th birthday. So that's an interesting connection to make with my birth. And it was April 1st, which is also very auspicious, because God loves babies and fools. And when you're born on April 1st, you get both of them. So I was happy about that, too.
Having your birthday be on April Fool's Day, how did you feel about that? Like, would people want to especially play, you know, jokes on you? Would you play any jokes on anyone else?
I thought of it only in the term of blessings with the divine. For jokes, it's fine. I liked that everybody else was having a good time on that day, too. At school, there was always the April Fool's joke.
Right. How about the feel of your home? What do you remember, like, being a child and growing up in your home? Could you describe how that felt for you?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was my older sister, 3 years older, and then I, and then for 4 years, it was just the two of us, and then my brother was born. Mm-hmm. So it was the two of us, and we were very good friends, but it's interesting, the family, as a family, I don't know. You know when they talk about attachments, how difficult it is to move away from the family and live. First place, we were the only family in America. All the relatives were in Hungary. Hmm. So I didn't have any cousins or aunts and uncles or anything like that in America. There were no other relatives. So I didn't have that family-type attachment. Mm. So in a spiritual life, in religious life, for me, that was not a real problem because I didn't have that connection to other people as being, you know, close family. I only met one aunt and one cousin. I didn't meet any other members of the family in real life. So it's in, you know, that part of it was for me almost a lesson that I've had many past lives already. Mm-hmm. You know, this was something very different. This life it has been experiencing things that led me more to try to connect to God in this, in being happy. Because, you know, I don't feel connecting to God in that spiritual sense is something that's going to make me sort of closed off from people. Mm. It's going to sort of make me more friendly, more happy. And I was a very cheerful child. I mean, that was the thing that I was always ready to walk up to somebody and smile and say something nice to them. In fact, that bothered Mama and Daddy a little bit. You know, they would wish to, no. But it was natural to feel a love and a friendliness to people.
So you almost, sounds like you had a sense that more attachment to a family is something you've experienced maybe in previous lives, and yes, this life was more to focus on the connection with God, and through that connection, as you said, it doesn't disconnect me from anyone else. It actually makes those connections even stronger.
Yes. Yes, it gives me more of a feeling of belonging to the, we're all one idea, that we come from the same source. So if we come from the same source, how can we be so different? Mm. But body-mind is different. And I could see that in the family, that we were very individual, which was good. But I don't know, it made me feel differently to people in general. I feel more connected to meeting new people and being with people. At this age now, I'm enjoying a little bit more to have a little by yourself type time. Just because I like the quiet. And I think that is also something that is very productive in your older age, to feel more comfortable. When people say, oh, I feel lonely, I don't have people around me that much, I don't feel that way. Mm. There's always something to think about in a good way, meditate about, and deepen a little bit in this time of your life, whereas before you were more occupied with whatever was your work, your job, your duty to do. That was more or less, when you're awake, you're at your duty. That's sort of how it goes. Now, it isn't quite that way. You look for a little quiet, a little time to be on your own. Mm. And I enjoy that.
You enjoy the quiet.
I enjoy the quiet and the time to listen. I enjoy listening to Gurudev's talks because now that I get to do the readings every day, the more you hear his comments on the scriptures and the more you hear his talks on the tapes that we can listen to on our little computers, you always hear something new. And this, for me, is exciting in that sense. And it's the same thing. It's the same tape. And I hear something different. Mm. That I hear it in a different way because I've learned a few things in between. And so I hear it from a different angle, which is interesting. But you know, when I mentioned it to people, why don't you listen to this tape again? It's very good. But I've heard it lots of times, you know. So, and I said, no, try it again. If you've grown a little bit since the last time you heard it, you're going to hear something in that tape that you didn't hear before. That's how when you come from a satsang and people are talking about Gurudev's talk and everything, and they say, sometimes they'll say something that you didn't hear. But you listen to the tape. Yes, it's there. If you're not ready to hear that, you don't hear it even if you listen to the tape again. Mm. It doesn't strike you. And I find this very interesting. Mm. And so it takes away any feeling of being alone or lonely. Mm.
Do you feel that listening itself is... even like an art form or a craft, something that can be practiced and you can become a more proficient listener over time?
I think so. Hmm. But do you know what? It depends on if you're interested. Hmm. If something, the Holy Father for Christmas, this past Christmas, was saying, why don't you, in the New Year's resolutions that you make, why don't you say to yourself, I want to be more childlike? What does that mean? It means that I can be amazed, I can be awed at the simple things that happen during the day, instead of just another day. I don't notice how little things, if I'm noticing, if I'm interested in what's going on, I feel that there are many new things that happen every day. And I love that, because I really feel that how can you be childlike and not be awkward and like a child in that aspect? You can get interested. You can get surprised. You can be awed. You can be interested in what's going on. And to me, that makes my life always happy and interesting, because I feel like everything today is different from yesterday. Mm. Really.
Mm. So it's a curiosity.
There's a curiosity.
Yeah.
And when some people feel, you know, I always joke, you can wake up either way. Good morning, God. Or you can wake up, good God, morning? Yeah. You know, it's so quick, yeah. The night went by. No, you want to wake up happily.
Mm. Yeah, and ultimately, you know, is this life a gift?
It is.
Do you feel that way?
Yes.
Yeah.
I really do. And I, as I've been more involved in yoga, in that sense of seeing the spiritual life from an entity standpoint, I don't know, social people in their life, they're more interested in what's going on today politically, in socially speaking, job-wise. It is outside of yourself. What's going on outside? Mm. And I feel that everything that is going on now, particularly from the yogic approach, how is this helping me to fulfill the purpose for this birth? Mm. What's happening today? What am I learning that I can change? Because that's why I'm in this life. Yeah. Something has to be worked out. I think like everybody else, we bring this little black garbage bag that has to be emptied by doing things a little differently than you did them in the last birth. How can you benefit from this test, this situation? And so I look at the day from a different standpoint.
So everything external, you know, looking at it through the lens of how can I use the external to help help foster some kind of growth, healthy change internally with me, and to be really curious about what's happening inside. Like, yes. Is that the number one priority, to focus on what's happening for me inside? What's my mind doing? What's my body doing? Because I have the most direct control of that. And also, can I have faith in the outcome of doing that internal work?
Yes, because as you keep doing that, you become a little bit more proficient in being interested in considering what goes on during the day, to making it be to your advantage. Mm. And a lot of times, being to your advantage just means it helps you correct yourself, or it helps you notice mistakes, or it helps you notice things that many times you hear other people say, "Oh, forget it. It will pass. It will go away. I'm not interested in that now." And I find myself not occupied by interest in that, but taking interest in it, because why else is it happening? Mm. Why else am I in that situation if it wouldn't be God's putting me there? And I feel the last maybe 40, 50 years, I have become more aware of, you know, why you're in this? Why are you with this person? Because they have a purpose of being in your life at this time. And I remember when I was studying in Italy, violin, in 62 and 3, Maestro Maglioni was like a guru. I mean, he was, "I want you to do this and this and this. I want you to respond to this. I don't want you to be doing what you want to do. I'm going to say something and I want you to apply it. I don't care what you do when you get home, when you go back. But while you're here, I have to be the one in charge." And that was sort of new to me, to have somebody outside of my father in particular, to be the one in charge like that, humanly speaking. So it was very interesting. And my mother was stayed for the first summer with me and came to all the lessons and was absolutely in bliss because she grew up in Europe, and there's a European way of approaching teaching and studying and going through things. And Maestro Maglioni was the first person that ever had that same feeling of try this, try that. And sometimes it was devastating. He would have me change the hand position, would do it in another way, use different fingering. And as you studied it and memorized it, you went through this. Now he's changing the whole thing, using different positions, different string, everything. Come back the next week after going through all of that. He's listening. It was better the last way. So we would go back to the other way. And I would, at the beginning, my face probably looked like I had just swallowed castor oil or something. But he stuck with it, and Mama was so impressed that he was trying to make me break down and just keep listening. Don't be concerned about, oh, you memorized it this way, hold on to it. Open up. Just move along. And here's how to move along. Listen. And he's only telling you this in order to improve. He's not telling you there to make you cry. He wants you to see that this position that you worked on is different from this. And that's what a guru wants you to experience. And they may say things that hurt. They may ask you to do something that you don't feel drawn to do. Do it. And you honestly learn that ultimately it is for your good, even if you have to work through. And I noticed that being a year and a half with him, study made a tremendous difference. You know, I heard things differently when I was listening to myself. And he mentioned, go to Santa Croce, a church that was only a block away, and just sit inside, and they have the marble columns. They were green marble, but it wasn't just green. You know, it was a varied green color on the marble, not just a solid color. And he said his mother would go in and would be praying and meditating, and he had to go in and just watch the color change in the marble. So he said, you go over and do that. Because I was doing something from the Bach sonatas, and he said, you're not subtle enough. You're not hearing within the phrases the degrees of accent, of dynamics, of emotion, that they're very slight, but without it, it's not the passage. So go watch the changes. It was amazing just to sit and watch the sunlight coming through the windows, changing the marble colors, and very subtly. And when I went back, I just mentioned to him, I've never watched marble change in colors like that. And he said, it should change the way you see, but it should change the way you hear. And how do you express what you see and hear? You have to get into, and I find life is like that. That's what Gurudev was so masterly about, noticing things, and how he would tell the same story but change one or two details so that the story was the same story, but he would emphasize something that would, walking out of the room, somebody would say, you know, I've heard that story so many times, but I thought he said something different tonight, and it just made it like a new story to me. And I think he was masterly in doing that, so that you don't walk out and say, same thing. It's not the same thing, because you're different. So you should hear something different.
Every moment is different and unique, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I find that, that to me is what spiritual life is about.
That curiosity.
Yes.
In the moment of, you know, not being bored. I think that that's the yes. word around this conversation that happens. You know, I could stare at sunlight hitting a column and feel that that's a boring thing, nothing's happening. But there's so much there, I think, that you're pointing to really be interested in. And maybe that's like the spiritual life, is just being so interested and curious and what's happening now. And even to do that, I think the ego needs to go away.
Yes. You know what Gurudev says? Live in, come on, live in the golden present. And he loves to use words that have many meanings. He's a master in the language. You know, that was not his first language.
Yeah. The golden present.
But golden because it's precious. It's it's different. It's strong. It's shiny. It lasts a long time. And it influences you. It attracts you. Those are all words for gold and golden. And then what about living the golden present? A present is a gift. It's unique. In this moment, it's different from all other moments. Then live in the golden present. Don't just exist. Live.
Yeah.
Those are little things that you can pin those up on your mirror or someplace in your head, and you realize he's telling you every moment is different and important. Because if you're supposed to move on and not pay attention to it, that's important. And when you don't understand that that's possible, you are wasting time. You should be able to distinguish between important things and happenings. This is just a happening, go through it, but this one, pay attention to it, learn something from it.
I wanted to ask about your parents. Can you share a little bit about just what they were like, how they parented, what you learned from them?
Well, my father was in boarding school all his life. I think from early grade school on. And then was in boarding school for high school, both universities, and Cornell for his doctorate. So he didn't have much of time with the family. He was born in 1889. Mm-hmm. And those were years when diseases were prevalent. There were 11 children, and only 3 lived. And my father came home at Easter on vacation, and the 11th little girl caught the flu from him that he brought home from school. He didn't have it, but he brought and she passed. And my father overheard if Ferko hadn't come home, for the vacation, he wouldn't have brought this. And that really affected him. Mm. He wasn't supposed to have heard it, but he did. Mm. So he said, you know, it really pained him a lot. But he was into his studies. My mother was a very fine pianist. She had master classes with his mother, with Liszt as a pianist, master class. She played beautifully. And she wanted Daddy to play piano. So he was taking piano lessons. And whenever he'd come home, he played the same piece because he really didn't want to play himself. He loved music, but that's it. He was in science. Hmm. And he was very good at it. He was a research chemist, and he did very well in that. He was one of, what is this, important U.S. chemist, research chemist or something. He's in that collection. So he did very well. My mother was an artist and played music. Her father was a concert violinist. And because he was Lutheran, in the family, there had to be a minister. The older boy was a pianist. He taught piano at the conservatory in Budapest. And he said, You have to take over, drop your violin concertizing, and take over the ministry. So, as a minister, the priest was a violinist in Lugoj. The cellist was a rabbi. Granddaddy was violinist, and the another minister was a violist in the same city where he was stationed. These people were fantastically musical. Mm. And every Sunday afternoon, they would come over and they played together. And Mama's mother played piano. And she would play if they needed a pianist. So there was a lot of music in the family, both my father's family and Mama's. Mm. So they were interested in that. And so both of them were family people. They really enjoyed being at home and being with us when we were growing up. My father read to us a lot. And, you know, coming from the office, I remember in the evenings, we were doing homework and there was no radio or television or anything. Television didn't even exist in our little age. But they didn't have the radio on even, because Daddy would talk to Mama about the research of the day. Here was a problem that he had to bring home. And he would go through it with Mama. And she said, you know, darling, I didn't understand a word what I was talking about. But I sat there with real interest. Mm. And then all of a sudden, he would be listening to himself of what is he saying. Mm. And finally, he would say, I think I have it. Then the radio would come on. They could listen to something. We would be finished with homework. We could come in and listen to something and then go to bed. But, you know, there was interest. And Mother would paint. She went to the Corcoran in Washington and took studies. Not so much that she wanted to be with other people, because we were all in school after that time. And she would be at home. And she said, yes, I didn't go every day, but three times a week I went to school because I want to be with other people. And you're in that room and you get influenced by creative thinking and enjoyment of what they're doing. They're not disgusted. And then when she would come home, she said she felt more renewed, and then she would go to her studio and paint and feel comfortable. My father was in charge. There is no two ways about it. But he gave enough support to Mama so that there was a really nice feeling between the two of them. They didn't know each other. Daddy bought the house in Arlington. And his parents thought, you buy a house, he must have a girlfriend. Well, what is this? No, he has to marry a Hungarian, a person of our class, a person that we know. Come home. So he went home. The families knew each other. But my mother did not know my father at all. So they were home for a week or so, and this was the family marriage, so it doesn't make any difference. My father had passed away, my grandfather had passed away a year before. So it was within, a time that you don't have these happy occasions coming through. Yeah. Within that.
So this is, you're talking about when your father was a young man and right before he met your mother.
Yes.
Okay.
My grandfather had passed away a year before, so they were still in mourning. Mm-hmm. So that was not the most positive situation for a marriage, and Mama was almost engaged to a lawyer who was finishing, and Grandma was not in favor of that at all, because he was going to be stationed in Romania. So everything worked out. Nah, that's finished. Here you are with my father. So they got married very quickly and spent the rest of the month in Europe traveling around, and then came back to America and went right away to Arlington, where we had a lovely home. And it was really interesting. Mama had studied ballet as a young lady, and she also took hatha. There was a hatha teacher in Lugosz, and she said that the teacher insisted that she take, because the hatha teacher was concerned with the breathing and the deep relaxation. And they said, what is more important in the ballet for balance than good breath, good breathing, strength, determination, and whatever has to be done? My mother had that, those qualities. It was interesting. She was well developed in that way. And when we were growing, I was like 2 or 3 years old, and she had some other children from the area who wanted to take some stretching, some opening to ballet. And Mama said, sure, she would work with them. And so I had a chance to, you know, be on the floor and be in the room. So there was, it was a nice feeling as a young child. I enjoyed that much more than my sister. She loved to read and play the piano, and I loved to do things with other people. And so I was more interested in playing. Ook me do it. It was like.
How about school life for you?
School life was fine. when I went to Hume School, which exists as a museum now, I enjoyed, we learned to read very quickly because when my father read to us, we would be either sitting in his lap or in the chair next to him, and he would be going with his finger across the line, so you would see what he was reading. And in school, this was about 1933, something like that, 34. The teacher in school had us many new words that we would read and find during the day. It's unbelievable. She wanted us to cut them out from the newspaper, to find in some section of the newspaper these words that we had learned during the day. You know, and that was really interesting. And my father would try to have us point to any word that we had been introduced to, and we would read it from the sentence, not he. And then we go through the whole sentence. So it was a really fun type of time with him. He really enjoyed being with us. And he loved chess. He was an excellent chess player. And he and Dr. Gerstorf from the office, he would come out at night, have supper with us, and they would play chess. And they would be playing chess for 2-3 hours. And my father would make a move, and Dr. Gerstorf would say, "That's too hard. You can't do a move like that." You know, we could hear the game going on, and then they would laugh. It was a lot of fun, but Daddy loved the challenge of somebody who also loved to do something that took thinking. Not just come and have supper and then converse about who knows what. No, let's play. Because he said it makes a difference when you're doing research. Gerstorf did too. You're thinking in a discriminative way, that you want to release something and open up something. And so games like that, he loved. He really loved to play that way and was very good at it. So both of the parents were very interested and had a good upbringing themselves and tried to pass that on to us.
Anything that you know about, like, your family history of how your parents came to this country, or the story of your grandparents?
Well, they go back to about 14th century that the coat of arms come from in both families. They were in different parts. My mother's family was more close to Budapest and in the central north part. My father's family, some were from that area, but most of them were from the lower half of Hungary and over to the Atlantic Ocean. No. Yes, to the Atlantic Ocean side, which would be east in Hungary.
West.
Okay, whichever. Anyhow, a little bit more toward that side. Mm-hmm. So there were some very. I don't know, when you live in a certain life standard, there are certain experiences that come no matter where you live. There are just certain history that comes down. And that is the sort of how it comes. I don't know so much the history of of Mama's family, because the mother's side was Catholic, and Daddy's granddaddy, Chonka, was Lutheran. So I don't know what their part of the family, but they were very much into music and arts. My mother's uncle was a Tibetan Buddhist and traveled in Tibet and made the first, wrote the first Hungarian sort of grammar for Tibetan and Hungarian, because he said when he traveled and went up in the mountains, there was a place where he said, I understood what the people were speaking in Tibetan, and he was speaking, thinking in Hungarian. And he said it was absolutely mind-boggling that he had that vocabulary that was there. So he said there must have been a connection in ancient times. Mm. Hungarian has a Sanskrit background. So he said it could come from something like that, that he was able to work out a grammar book that he brought back to Hungary with him. And it was much appreciated by people who were trying to study. So Mama's family was more into that. And my father's family, my grandfather was a physicist, pharmacist, and grandma was a pianist.
Do you know the story of how they came to the United States? Or why they came?
Oh, because Daddy got his doctorate at Cornell, got his job in Washington immediately as a research chemist, biochemist. And so, naturally, he was going to stay here. Mm. And Mama came only because Daddy was living here.
And so when the family connected them, she was still in Hungary.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Mm. Mama was not here at all. They hadn't met. She knew the family. She knew Grandma. But Daddy was not at home during those times when they would visit.
So it was totally arranged.
It was totally arranged.
Wow.
Totally arranged. And the funny thing is, because Daddy bought a house and had the house built, they immediately thought he must have a girlfriend, must be wanting to get married. So that's
when they took action.
They took action like. So that's how we have and we still only now our own family. My sister married, had three children. She passed away with the third boy. So they are the three relatives, and they are now in their, the children are now in their 50s. And so their children are married with children. So we have relatives now only because of this immediate family having some children. The relatives are all in Europe. They've all stayed in Hungary. So that's quite interesting. And we had, Daddy was a very good horseback rider. And we moved from Arlington into Maryland. He got 125 acres, and he wanted to live in the country where there was someone else did the farming for us, but he wanted to have some farming. He wanted new life. He wanted to have we had two cows so that we had milk, and he learned how to milk a cow himself. So before he went to work every morning, he did the milking. Mm. You know, it's really interesting that he wanted to be active, and I think it's because he really never had what was a home life as a young boy. Mm. He was always in school. And even in vacation times, he would be elsewhere. I don't know why. Mm.
Did you feel close with him?
With my father?
Yeah.
He had a loving nature. And he would take you very close. As a very small child, he would hold me a lot. Mm. He would lie down on his back, and he would have me on his knees or on his tummy and play. Mama had some pictures of that, so it was very sweet. But he didn't do that much with Virginia, the older one. Mm. I don't know. Mama just said that... I was a very happy child, and I think that sort of connected a little bit with him. And I was very close to my mother, and I'm very much like Mama. Mm. So,
is there anything particular that stands out that you really learned from her that was extremely important for you in your life?
I tell you, it's paying attention. Mm. I remember after my father passed, maybe in another year or so, she moved to Washington, and my brother and his wife stayed at the country place, and then they just went. We were 16 miles from D.C., so they would go in, and Mama lived on Mass Avenue. And she would walk around in the morning. Once I was at home visiting, and we went for the morning walk. And she just said, they made some changes since the last time that you were here. Let's go for a walk. But she wanted for me to find out, what were these changes? I was walking around, and it was fine. And I didn't notice what she was noticed. So she said, let's go again. You didn't notice something. So we walked around again, and I still didn't notice it. And she was very upset. Because she said, how is it that we're going for a walk because there had been changing some things in the last time you were here, and you didn't notice this? And I said, well, I didn't. I was too interested in seeing this and this. I probably wasn't looking on this side. Honey, you have to see. She would be sketching any other place when we would travel in Europe together and everything. Her sketchbooks were like what other people take as films. You could tell exactly where you were, but not because it was photographic, but because she accentuated something in this little area that were pictured. Maybe it was a tree. Maybe it was a car. Maybe it was a horse. It didn't make any difference. She accentuated something from that made you know exactly where that was drawn. It was phenomenal how she would just see. So we were walking, and the Mayflower Hotel is on this side, and then on this side of it was what I was supposed to see. Well, in years past, the garbage trash cans, you had to go down about five steps, and there was a large area here, and the big windows in the apartment place here, and the garbage cans were down at the bottom base of the stairs. Well, that's what I noticed. I didn't look for there. I knew that that's what that was. I was looking around. No. What changed was the garbage was not down there anymore. The people who lived in the basement apartment had redone this whole thing. The garbage can came up on the sidewalk. The steps had been covered with water. I don't think they took away the steps, but there was a pond down here now. Fish pond with beautiful lilies down here. And she couldn't understand that.
How you missed it.
You know, that I would miss this, seeing it. But when she told me and I looked at it, I said, oh my goodness, this is lovely to see this now. They'd made a pond out of that area. What a benefit for the basement people. They had a big window now and a pond, and they didn't bother them at all about the street noise or garbage can. So I thought that was wonderful. And then she mentioned to me, you have to be more observant about anything and everything. You really have to pay attention. Pay attention to people. I do. If you're talking, I'm really listening to what you say. I'm not looking around to see somebody else. I really do pay attention. But sometimes I just found that that was an important thing. Mama went to a yogic meditation class in Washington. Vishnu Devananda had a center in D.C. at that time, and she wanted to go for the meditation. So when she went in, they had a table like this, and chairs around and so on, but they had several things on the table. It was a vase of flowers, a picture, pen, pencil, a little bit of paper, something. And she said when she went in, she was just looking. Oh, my goodness, it's interesting to have a table like that in a meditation class. What's this about? So when the teacher came in, opened up a cloth, but covered the table, and then was asking individuals, I have a piece of paper for each one of you. I want you to put down everything you remember seeing on this table. Mama had the whole thing.
She got it.
And the people, they were floored. They said, how did you see all of that? Well, that's what it means to be the artist. You notice things of this kind, and so I that was my first thing to see that, and I got it, and I remember what's on it, and that struck me when she told me that story, because I felt, you know what, that's what she was asking me to do. You know, be more observant of things.
It goes back to the golden present. I think that's what allows for that.
Yes.
To be totally interested in what's happening now, right
yes.
now.
Yes. And so over those years, I think that was one of the first thing that she would, I would say, I learned from her.
I'm wondering, do you remember what your first job was? Or an early job that maybe you had?
Well, set the table. No, before that was make your bed. And Mama would help me until I was old enough to be able to make the bed myself, which wasn't too old, but you have to be able to pull and straighten everything. But to set the table, and that was fun, because there were five of us all together. And Daddy sat by himself over here because he served everybody. that I remember one thing that I, you know, you think of it as being something so silly, but it is something I never forgot. You had to eat what you were served. Hmm. Had to, in a sense. There was no spanking connected to it, but you didn't refuse. That's all there was to it. You had to eat it. And I just did not like, in those days, I didn't like spinach. I love it now, but I didn't like it there. And Daddy would be, he knew those things, but you had to have something of everything. And there was like a tablespoon of spinach on the plate. Everything else disappeared. The spinach stayed. We didn't have dessert every day in the evening, but that night we had apple pie. So everybody else's dishes went out clear. No, they couldn't touch my dish. There was still spinach on it. I had to eat the spinach. I didn't want to eat the spinach. So there was no pie and just spinach on the dish. Everybody finished. They were gone. They left the table. And from the living room, my father calls. Have you eaten the spinach yet? I heard there was a voice tone that was irritated. Hmm. I tell you, the fork took the whole spoonful of spinach. It was in my mouth. Yes, Daddy. Oh, all right, darling, you can have the pie. Hmm. And that was it. But you know, that it was just something like his voice. You knew absolutely.
There's something about our voices, I think, that to speak about paying attention, right? Like the nuance, the tone, the way that you say yes. something, it has a power to it, right?
It really does. Mm. And that would not have been fun if I hadn't eaten that yet, because I was going to eat it whether I liked it or not. Mm. And he would have come in. No, you don't. There are certain things that you realize you have to consider.
How about a paying job? Did you have, like, when you were in high school or early years or anything like that? No? Did you know, like, so if you could share about, you know, your path into religious studies and your interest in that, is that something you knew from a child, that this is what you wanted to devote your life to, or was it something discovered later
on? Only that situation of ...1939, where I had that experience with Gurudev. Then I realized that was a divine, something I never had imagined before. And to me, it was the Christ. And by the time it was finished, I left. I went in to see Mama. And she said, Mama's painting, darling. Could you come back a little later? So I went back out on the porch, and it was still there. Smiling, didn't say a word, just looked at me. And at that moment, I gave myself to God. That was it, period.
Mm. About how old were you?
10 years old. Mm. It was August of 39. Mm. And it was very, very, very strong experience. Mm. And I didn't have any reason to discard that. I mean, that was when I gave myself to God at that time. I meant it. I mean, it was really.
What did that mean to you, to give yourself to God? at that time?
That I was going to be a nun.
Mm. That's what it meant.
Yes. Because my mother went to Catholic school in Hungary all her life. She finished the gymnasium, which would be more like 1 or 2 years of college, which girls didn't go to. She and the rabbi's daughter and somebody else were the only girls in her class in the high school. Or 2 years of college is sort of what it was equal to in America. So she would tell me about the sisters and how much they did for the students and how much she loved them and they were so helpful and I felt that would create that opportunity for me at the same time to grow in that way and express in that way. So it just stayed with me. And when I was a junior and senior in high school, I went to Catholic U and I studied acting. Hmm. And I was there were four of us who were in this one little group. And we had to give a play. Sometimes we gave two of them if they were very short in a week. But we were in the summer school for 3.5 weeks. So we had a lot of time to different plays and different actions and things like that we were learning. Speak, enunciate clearly so that you can be heard instead of swallowing half your words. And that's when I met the sisters that I went to afterwards. They were so loving of each other. Mm. And that was impressive because there were so many different orders in the summer attending classes. And I could see, here again where you notice things, mm. I could see that some of them were so happy to be taking different classes and being alone, then they could go to lunch with this one or go out here and blah, blah, blah. And the Precious Blood Sisters, they wanted to have lunch together. And that affected me in a very positive way. Mm. I thought, you know, they love being together. Mm. They were apart all day in different classes, and they would like lunch together. Mm. And so I felt very, very touched by Sister Ambrosine. And she didn't make any, would you like to be a sister? Have you thought of that or something? And she was just herself, loving to each one of us and to the sisters in the family. And it made a lot of difference to me. Mm. So I was thinking of the Carmelites at the beginning. They were full. Mm. This was in 1947. You had a waiting list, and they could only have 22, otherwise they had to open up a new house. Mm. So I changed from the contemplative to the active. I thought, no, I don't want to wait for how many years, and I don't even want to finish the college first. I want to go and then finish college while I'm there, because they had college, the sister. So I went that way. And it was very, very interesting to meet different people out west, because this was Midwest in Kansas, are very different from people on the East Coast, as a general rule. So the Midwest, I think, was heavily settled with people from Germany, And that part of Europe, which has a certain cultural feel. Mm-hmm. So it was very interesting, our years there. And we went to college, finished up college there, and went to graduate school. And it was, again, it was very interesting because I remember, you know, it's interesting. I'm sure there were, because you're with human beings. There were probably difficulties and everything, but to me, I remember even when we were living together there, in the summers, over 500 of us at home, and then others away for summer school, I remember a feeling of closeness, of family in the right sense of the word, not attachments, but of a lot of fun in being together. And that's another thing that drew me. But when I had a chance, I met the person who played the piano for me for my graduate recital in Florence. She's the one that introduced me to Gurudev. Because when she came back, her students would be telling her, we just came from this really interesting talk. There's a Swami, he dresses in orange, a Swami, and he's giving talks on Friday night at the Universalist Church. You really should come. They would ask her, tell her, come with us and everything. So she said, I went once, and it was fantastic. And she said, you know, one of the things that really got me was he came in at 7:30 or 8 o'clock, whenever was the talk. He walked in from the side, and he said, everybody stood up. And she said, I wasn't used to having someone powerful enough. Mm. He didn't do anything except he walked in and had a chair set up for him. So he was sitting on the chair. And she said, it was like, I got up too. She said, it's amazing. I'm going again. And so she went for a while. She's, next time that you come to D.C., come to New York, and I'll take you for that talk. Well, that didn't happen. I didn't get a chance to do that. But I was reading for the 1971 Sisters Today, a report on the 10-day interfaith retreat that Gurudev had sponsored in New York. And that the priest who wrote the article was there. He was one of the four speakers for the 10-day retreat. And he said it was excellent. There were over 500 people that were coming. And they had a wonderful, wonderful retreat. And they were going to have another one in the 71, and that's the one I got to go to. Mama went, Sister Helen Elizabeth went, and it was a change. A change in my life. I've never had an experience like that, because it was he. That's how I know absolutely it was he, back in 39. That energy was right there. And I think he recognized it, because when I saw him, It was from the back. He was giving a hug to Brother David, and Rabbi Gelbelman had just arrived, and so they were in this little circle. But then he let go, and there were a number of us had come out on the staircase of the dining hall to welcome him and then go back and finish your supper. But they said we could come out and welcome him if we wished. So I did. Mama came. And Sister Helen Elizabeth came. And when I saw him, he turned around. Avi, you know, there was this, like, there was that same energy, that light, that radiance of him that was there. It's not, you don't have that. You can't manufacture it yourself. It's there. And I think there was a response there also. Because during the talks, we were in the auditorium for the talks, I would be listening to some of the other talks, but I would be listening because they all four were sitting on the stage. And I would just look at him, and his eyes would, and then he would look away and so on. But you could tell there was something there that was of recognition. And at the last days, they were talking about the possibility of initiation for anybody who feels ready to have a guru. And they really mentioned that, be sure that you want a teacher if you want to have an initiation. Because that's the way in which you will be able to benefit from the teacher. Because you have that faith, that trust, and so you're going to believe and try to be supportive. Oh, I knew. I mean, there was just no doubt about it. And my mother was very, very open to it. You know, Mama was not baptized because Granddaddy said, this is sort of a delicate situation. I'm the minister here, and my daughter is getting baptized by the Catholic priest. No, dear. But I went to Catholic school. I did everything Grandma wanted other than that. So Mama took initiation and was very happy. She was very, very loyal to her initiation. And that, it took 3 years. Grita was testing the whole time.
Can you share about your relationship with him? And is there something in particular that you brought to the Integral Yoga family that he appreciated, maybe, that wasn't present before you came?
Well, I don't know. The fact that I had been in the spiritual life, officially the spiritual life, not on the sideline, but that was my choice in life. It made a difference when they found the ashram to have someone who was a little more than 22 or 25. I was already 40. So I think it meant something I don't know whether I brought anything at all to him. He gave everything to me. Whatever was in me, he brought out. There's just no two ways about it. He had that influence because I yearned to have it. He didn't force it on me at all. It was just, I reacted to him in that way that this is exactly what I'm looking for.
Maybe he appreciated that. You know, we talk about the empty cup.
Yes.
Right? Like for a teacher, you need to, if your cup is already full and you think you know everything, then you can't receive it. But it sounds like you were in a place where you were totally open to receiving.
I really, and I still am. Mm. Because he sees everything. Mm. And you wouldn't even be here if you had everything. You would have long since left the body and gone on, at least for this lifetime.
So there's always more.
You finished, and then there's always more. Mm. So I don't know. I think he's the one that's keeping me alive now, for sure. Because the guru is God. God is the guru. It isn't like two different people. It's one essence. That I really realize is the truth. When you have found someone who is truly your guru, you have found God in the manifested form of your guru. And that's why you can have that level of faith in the and trust in the guru, because the guru that you have chosen and given yourself to has that power from God. God is the realization in that person, because that person has completely given over the human nature and is essentially, on the spiritual level, is essentially the God energy.
I wanted to ask you about hope. It seems pretty common for people to almost speak badly about the direction that the world is going, you know? And so when changes are happening, it seems that changes just happen faster and faster and faster, and it's hard to deal with it. I mean, even before this, I'm so impressed that you use a smartphone and try to stay up with technology a little bit and to check the weather and all that.
Do you know what, Avi? Mm. That word, ultimately, that's the catchword. No matter what it is, God says it's my name, it's my form, it's my play, it's my blah, 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 blah. Ultimately, it's all for good. And if you forget that last little phrase, it's a mess. How these changes that are coming are they're mind-blowing. Dangerous. But ultimately, it's all for good, and God's in charge.
And is that the essence of a spiritual path, is to not lose that faith, to have that faith that ultimately it's all for good, and I have a feeling in my heart that that God's in charge.
God's in charge. Hmm. And it's going to come out. He's not saying how long. Hmm. Ultimately, is open-ended. Hmm.
But it seems also that this is the internal, what happened, the internal work for each of us to notice inside of myself, oh, am I being a doomsayer? Am I getting caught in that that dread, that fear of the future? And is the work internally to take that fear, to see it and transmute it into love, into the faith?
Absolutely. You that's why the whole element in our life is love. Love is the support of our entire life. And if it isn't, you're in trouble. Because then it turns into selfishness, it turns into prejudice, it turns into jealousy, it turns into greed, it turns into everything that is wrong in the world now. Look at, just see, there are so many millions, and we're in the billions, if we're 8 billion people, there are billions of people who are wonderful. But who stands out? who do the newspapers and the magazines and the radio, television, who do they feature? Everybody is supposed to look at and see who's getting the bonus for the best movie. I mean, do they talk? Do they really give station time and newspaper and book magazine time to people who do good things? Not very many.
So that same thing's happening inside, right? Like internally, yes. How much time am I giving to the good things?
That's what we all have. That's what we have to say. Live in the golden present. Hmm. That's one of my favorite sayings of his, because it doesn't force you, but it leads you to the highest choices in your life. Because you realize, without this, I'm not happy. So what's the point? You're always starting over again. You choose the wrong thing, and now you're in this low section. I got upset. I didn't like this. I'm not going to talk to this person anymore. Blah, blah, blah. Whatever it is, you realize you've hurt yourself. Hmm. Who? You did.
Because you're not experiencing love.
That's it. And if you have love, you can't help to say, because you're the same as this other person. So you say, fundamentally, there is love, because you're the same essence. So there's love. But you don't have to have, that person doesn't have to be your dearest friend, nor do you have to have all kinds of activity or relationship with that person. You can have, choose your company. So you can...
But to still wish them well.
Wish them well.
Yeah.
Just don't relate to them in the areas where you realize it's bad company. And they may not think it's bad company, that they love to have wine to drink, or they love to have a glass of whiskey or whatever it is. They don't consider that a bad thing. I don't consider that a bad thing in that sense, bad. I consider it unhealthy. For me, maybe it's healthy for the other people. Sometimes they say these people are 100 and some years old and they've been drinking wine since they were babies. Mm-hmm. And they've had sometimes way over. The wine. They've been drunk many times. Okay. I mean, that's their life. That's not my life.
Seems that the competition is such a strong pull sometimes.
It must be.
But it doesn't have to be, right? Or to be aware of how strong that pull is, to make an adversary in someone instead to this is the practice of coming back to love. And no, the truth is, the greater truth is I don't wish them harm. I wish them well.
And you know, Christ gave us that example. He didn't hate the Jews, for heaven's sake. Who was he having a problem with? The Pharisees.
Well, he was Jewish.
He was Jewish.
Yeah.
He loved his faith. He loved the scriptures. He loved the... I mean, that is not the point.
Yeah. The point is to overcome all that. Yeah.
What was his main emphasis in his teachings? Love and forgiveness. Yeah. What else could you expect?
Yeah. So that's why I want to see examples of that on the news, of people doing that.
And that's what I see in Gurdjieff. Yeah. What was he asking of us? Love each other. How many times did he say that? Over and over and over again. Just, if you love each other, you're going to think for the benefit of the other. And you're going to be drawn toward serving the people, not just doing things for them, serving. And if you serve, you have to love. You can't serve if you don't love. It's not called service. It becomes work.
What's become a very important word for me is allegiance, like internal allegiance, because what I've learned is that the allegiance to the mind is very strong, of this mind thinking, oh, I know about this person and what's right and wrong in the world and all of that. And that allegiance was strong for a long time within me. But what now I'm interested is the allegiance of love, to rise above that and to question myself, is how you're being right now in this present moment, where's your allegiance? Where is it? Yeah. You know? Mataji, thank you so much. I'm very blessed by your presence. I appreciate you,
thank you
phenomenally.
So much, Avi.
Shall we end with another prayer?
Yes. You do it this time.
Om Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. And may the light of truth overcome all ignorance.
Victory to that light.
Jai Shri Satguru Maharaj Ki.
Jai. Marvelous.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this content and think others might as well, please feel free to share and subscribe.